Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryan Karavavahai, Tejasvi Navadhitamastoma Vidivishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So page 9, verses 24 to 31, Krishna captivated the ladies of Mathura. Srila Jiva Goswami explains that the following three verses describe the scene of Krishna and Balaram entering Mathura. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, the women of Mathura hurriedly assembled and went forth to see the two sons of Vasudeva as they entered the city on the king's road, surrounded by their cowherd boyfriends. Some of the women, my dear king, eagerly climbed to the roofs of their houses to see them. Some of the ladies put their clothes and ornaments on backwards. Others forgot one of their earrings or ankle bells, and others applied makeup to one eye but not the other. Those who were taking their meals abandoned them. Others went out without finishing their baths or massages. Women who were sleeping at once rose when they heard the commotion, and mothers breastfeeding their infants simply put them aside. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, the word sotsavaha indicates that those who were engaged in such activities as getting married abandoned the activity. Even brides in the process of being married failed to complete their circumambulation of their husbands. Right, when they first come out and they do the seven, then the Krishna came, they just left to go see. Right? Yeah. So it's, you know, similar like in Vrindavan, that attraction and everything like that. But Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, the lotus-eyed lord, smiling as he recalled his bold pastimes, captivated those ladies' minds with his glances. He walked with the gait of a lordly elephant in rut, creating a festival for their eyes with his transcendental body, which is the source of pleasure for the divine goddess of fortune. The ladies of Mathura had repeatedly heard about Krishna, and thus as soon as they saw him, their hearts melted. They felt honored that he was sprinkling upon them the nectar of his glances and broad smiles, taking him into their hearts through their eyes. They embraced him, the embodiment of all ecstasy. And as their bodily hairs stood on end, O subduer of enemies, they forgot the unlimited distress caused by his absence. Now all is right in the world again. Yes.
So we've heard about three categories of Madhur Jarasa towards Krishna. One is the example of Kubja, then the beginnings of Dwarka, and then the beginnings of Vrindavan. So, under which category is the delays of Mathura and the Brahma's wife in fit, or it's their own category?
I mean, I haven't heard them category. Means they say the Mahishis of Mathura, they're in that first category. But it may be that there's also the individual aspect. But the queens of Dwarka, then they're in their category because they're married to Krishna.
Right.
So then the gopis of Vrindavan, because of the Parakya, then they have that aspect. Yeah. You know, so these other ladies, I'm not sure. It appears that Mathura, because they only describe them in Mathura, Dwarka, and Vrindavan. And then these three are given. So it appears that they're very attracted to Krishna, as they see here.
Yeah.
But they see their own, that they are attracted, that they would like to be pleased by being with Krishna. Right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So that's what makes the difference. So it's they're dovetailing their the position of being with someone to being with Krishna. So they've taken the supreme choice in that who they'd want to be with, but it would be more along the line of their interest in being with Krishna. That would be so nice. That would be so wonderful. In other words, the effect that they would get from it. Does that make any sense or no? Yeah. So that's just what I've heard from the Acharyas, that they mention the Mahishis of Mathura. And Kubja is given as the example. But it's not that she's the only one. Does that make sense?
So they fall into that category.
From what I understand, they fall in that category. But it's completely dovetailed to Krishna, but it's still their desires then connected to Krishna. Rather than the queens, then it's half-half. But the gopis, then it's completely about Krishna. So that's the difference. But they're all attracted to Krishna, and they're all mentioned because, you know, why would it be mentioned unless it was, you know, serious about their absorption in Krishna? Right? You know, because even I think, not even sure that Bhishma Dev doesn't mention them also. And then he mentions the gopis. Okay.
It sounds like obvious Madhurja attraction.
Yes. But it's about he would be the best person to be with. Mm-hmm. You know, so in that way then they've understood correctly. Mm-hmm. But it still doesn't have that the element that it's about Krishna. It's about being with Krishna. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So that you'll find the difference. So all three groups, it's Krishna's the focus of attention. But in that, it's themselves connected to Krishna. Then the next is they're connected to Krishna, and it's about Krishna, but it's also about themselves, because that's the way marriage works. Yeah. Right? And then for the gopis, it's just about Krishna. Right? But the form of it doesn't change. Does that make sense? The masculine-feminine interaction won't change. You know, the dynamics of it, the techniques of it, those won't change. The mechanics of it won't change. But the difference will be is whether they're getting their own pleasure out of it or whether they're getting some. It's about Krishna or fully about Krishna. But it's connected to Krishna. Just like if we take anything and connect it to Krishna, we like something and we offer that to Krishna, then we get benefit. We become elevated. So that's considered devotional service. So
yeah, because in terms of Dwarka and the gopis, it's fully developed. But here, it's, and with Kubja as an example, it's undeveloped. It's just
because all it is, it appears to be, is just this walking through the streets, them seeing and them being attracted, and that's as far as it goes.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah, because otherwise, how far do you take such a relationship? Right? So that's where it just is there. So they're attracted to Krishna, and that's very nice. But it won't go farther than that. Taking him into their hearts through their eyes, they embraced him, the embodiment of all ecstasy. And as their bodily hair stood on end, O subduer of enemies, they forgot the unlimited distress caused by his absence. Their lotus faces bloomed with affection. The ladies who had climbed to the roofs of the mansions rained down showers of flowers upon Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna. Footnote 5. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti explains, women began to shower flowers in the form of their smiles, or showered the flowers in the form of actions indicating their love. Brahmanas standing along the way honored the two lords with presentations of yogurt, unbroken barley corns, pots full of water, garlands, fragrant substances such as sandalwood paste, and other items of worship. The women of Mathura exclaimed, "Oh, what severe austerities the gopis must have performed to be able to regularly see Krishna and Balaram, who are the greatest source of pleasure for all mankind." Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, "Passing by very slowly and smiling, Lord Krishna immediately stole their hearts. He who is the husband of the goddess of fortune passed through the streets like an elephant. For a very long time, the women of Mathura had heard about Krishna and Balaram and their uncommon characteristics, and they were very much attracted and eager to see them. Now when they actually saw Krishna and Balaram passing on the street and saw them sweetly smiling, the ladies' joy reached the point of ecstasy. When they actually saw them with their eyes, they took Krishna and Balaram within their hearts and began to embrace them to their fullest desire. The bodily hair stood up in ecstasy. They had heard of Krishna but had never seen him, and now their longing was relieved. After going up on the roofs of the palaces of Mathura, the ladies, their faces joyful, began to shower flowers upon Krishna and Balaram. When the brothers were passing through the streets, all the brahmanas in the neighborhood went out with sandal water and flowers and respectfully welcomed them to the city. All the residents of Mathura began to talk among themselves about the elevated and pious activities of the people of Vrindavan. The residents of Mathura were surprised at the pious activities the cowherd men in Vrindavan must have performed in their previous lives to be able to see Krishna and Balaram daily as cowherd boys." Verses 32-39, Krishna slays the washerman. Right, so they're going through now, they're still dressed as cowherd boys, like that. So that is so attractive, as we saw in the pastime in the, is it Brihad Bhagavatam, Rita? Then that Nava Vrindavan, when Krishna's dressed up as a cowherd boy, then the attractiveness is just so much more. So they're just so impressed on what piety must have been performed by these the residents of Vrindavan, that they get to daily see them like that in this form as cowherd boys. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the next six verses describe the opposite reaction of the wicked, starting with the washerman, right? So then all the pious, then their attraction, and then the wicked who are aligned with Kamsa, then how they responded. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "Seeing a washerman approaching who had been dyeing some clothes, Krishna asked him for the finest laundered garments he had. Lord Krishna said, 'Please give suitable garments to the two of us, who certainly deserve them. If you grant this charity, you will undoubtedly receive the greatest benefit.'" Right? Because if he does, then they'll, you know, whatever is their desire, the material benefits or spiritual or whatever it is, then they'll get those benefits. But otherwise, he's just a washerman, and that's all the more it's going to be. But if he serves Krishna, then their position is, you know, greatly improved. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, "Krishna was not a beggar, nor was he in need of clothing. But by this request, he indicated that everyone should be ready to offer Krishna whatever he wants. That is the meaning of Krishna consciousness." Right? So it's about fulfilling Krishna's desire. And so if Krishna is expressing that, then you fulfill it. Right? So if you hear from the acharyas, you hear from the scriptures, or hear from Krishna himself, then one trying to fulfill that desire of Krishna, that's the perfection. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, "Raja Kam Kaschid indicates a loyal follower of Kamsa with a demoniac nature. Vishnu Purana describes him as a wicked follower of Kamsa, Jasya Duratmanaha. He had some cloth for selling. However, to deceive Krishna, he said the cloth was for Kamsa." So Krishna knew it. So, you know, it's not just that it was Kamsa's cloth, and therefore he's, you know, then being a loyal servant, he had freshly dyed clothes, right? So it's for selling. But then he's claiming that, no, it belongs to Kamsa, because he's a follower of Kamsa, so he knows that he doesn't like Krishna. "However, to deceive Krishna, he said the cloth was for Kamsa. He was going from the washing place to the city. Krishna's glance upon him was the dyer's only auspiciousness. For it is said that a dyer with freshly washed cloth that a dyer with freshly washed cloth is inauspicious. Okay, so should be after it gets to the shop. So. This verse, 33, describes how he asked for the cloth. The Lord says, O dyer, Anga, these clothes are suitable since they have the color and form suitable for us. You cannot say that this cloth is not suitable for us. We deserve this cloth. Arhatoho. The washerman responds, How can I give it without payment? The Lord says, There will be the greatest benefit in this life and the next, Shreyaha, for the donor. Otherwise, there will be no auspiciousness. He made this statement to reveal the washerman's wicked nature when he responded. Even to the wicked, Krishna spoke most gently, right, and gives them the options. But being demoniac, they don't respond properly. But Krishna gives that option. Even to the wicked, Krishna spoke most gently. By this proper conduct, he also desired to remove any criticism concerning killing the washerman, since such criticism is intolerable to the devotees. Right? Because if he had dealt roughly, then they would say, oh, he didn't deal nice. But he dealt very nice, offered him everything, and all that. Another meaning of the last line is, one who does not give, adatuhu, will not attain Vaikuntha, but will merge in Brahman. For him, in this life, there's only doubt or death. Right? So in this life, there's doubt and death because that's just what it has to offer. Right? What is it? Doubt, death, and taxes. Right? You know, those are the unchanging rules of the material world. Right? Like that. But he was willing to obtain, then when he'd die, he'd go to Vaikuntha. But since he wasn't, he was inimical, then he'll only go to Brahman. But if he had given, he wouldn't have been killed. He would have then had all kinds of facilities in this life. And then next life he'd go. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Thus requested by the Supreme Lord, who is perfectly complete in all respects, that arrogant servant of the king became angry and replied insultingly. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Unfortunately, the washerman was a servant of Kamsa and therefore could not appreciate the demand of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the effect of bad association. He could have immediately delivered the clothing to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, promised him all good fortune. But being a servant of Kamsa, the sinful demon could not accept the offer. Instead of being pleased, he was very angry and refused the Lord's request, saying, How is it that you are asking for clothing which is meant for the king? Right? He's going to sell it. So even if he's taking it to the palace, it'll be going to the palace, and then the people there who manage the household, they'll look at the clothing, and then what they like, they'll buy it, and what they don't like, they'll send it back with him. But the point was, is it's not that it was already personally Kamsa's cloth. Right? Like he's trying to make it out to be. You know, or, you know, this is fit for the king, and you guys are just a bunch of cowherd boys or something. Right? The washerman said, You impotent boys, you're accustomed to roaming the mountains and forests, and yet you would dare put on such clothes as these, right? He just dyes clothes. He probably is wearing rags. But he's proud that he's dyeing clothes that are very high class, right? And selling them to high class people. So then how could such, you know, villagers ask for such clothes? Because then if they did, then in his mind, his cloth doesn't have the same prestige. And so he's very worried about his prestige. These are the king's possessions you are asking for. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, Udvrita means one who has deviated, ut, from good contact, vrita. O ill-mannered boys, have you ever worn such clothing? By the cleverness of Saraswati, the washerman's words can also mean the opposite. O boys of excellent, utkrista, character, vrita, who herd cows on Govardhan, will you wear these material clothes? That can never be. Therefore, why do you want to wear the clothes of an impure king, even in play? Right? So that's how the other meaning can be seen. Right? Because since they're meant for him, why would they want to wear them? Because then it means that, you know, this cloth is polluted while you should be wearing pure clothes. These are, because if it belongs to the king, then that means it's material. But you, being spiritual, you should only have spiritual items that are offered in devotion. The washerman said, "Fools, get out of here quickly. Don't beg like this if you want to stay alive. When somebody is too bold, the king's men arrest him and kill him and take all his property." Shri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. The normal meaning of the verse is clear. However, there is another meaning. O Bhagavan, who on the pretext of taking three steps of land claimed the body of Bali Maharaj, Bali Shah, you should not request on this way if you want to keep me alive. Or you should not request in this way if you want to keep me alive. Just as Bali fell into danger by giving in charity, if I give you the cloth, I will not live beyond today. The servants of the king will bind up that person who is not afraid of Kamsa, Dhritam, and after informing Kamsa, they will kill him and loot his house. Shri Sukadev Goswami continued, as the washerman thus spoke brazenly, the son of Devaki became angry, and then merely with his fingertips, he separated the man's head from his body. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Lord Krishna confirmed the statement of the Brahma Samhita that every limb of his body is capable of doing anything he likes. Without a sword, but simply with his hand, he cut off the head of the washerman. This is proof that the Supreme Lord is omnipotent. If he wants to do something, he can do it without extraneous help. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued, the washerman's assistants all dropped their bundles of clothes and fled down the road, scattering in all directions. Lord Krishna then took the clothes. Krishna and Balaram put on pairs of garments that especially pleased them, and then Krishna distributed the remaining clothes among the cowherd boys, leaving some scattered on the ground. Right? You know, that these aren't good enough. They're just left there. You know, just so it has that element of, how you say, recklessness to it. Right? Because that will then make it, if they'd taken everything, then okay, it's not, but they took and left some, you know, and just scattered. It's not like they gave it to somebody or sat it up nicely or, you know, anything. It's just, they just left it there. So that will also bring out. Verses 40 to 52. Krishna offers benedictions to the weaver and garland maker Sudama. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued, thereupon a weaver came forward and, feeling affection for the lords, nicely adorned their attire with cloth ornaments of various colors. And Krishna and Balaram looked resplendent, each in his own unique, wonderfully ornamented outfit. Footnote 6. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, they appeared brilliant since they had accepted service of the devotee. They resembled a pair of young elephants, one white and the other black, decorated for a festive occasion. Pleased with the weaver, the Supreme Lord Krishna blessed him that after death he would achieve the liberation of attaining a form like the Lord's, and that while in this world he would enjoy supreme opulence, physical strength, influence, memory, and sensory vigor. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, by this incident, Krishna proved that those who are Krishna conscious devotees will not be lacking material enjoyment or sense gratification. They will have sufficient opportunity for such things. But after leaving this body, they will be allowed to enter the spiritual planets of Vaikuntha Loka or Krishna Loka, Goloka Vrindavan. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued, the two lords then went to the house of the garland maker Sudama. When Sudama saw them, he at once stood up and then bowed down, placing his head on the ground, after offering them seats and bathing their feet. Sudama worshipped them and their companions with argya, garlands, pan, sandalwood paste, and other presentations. Sudama said, O Lord, my birth is now sanctified and my family free of contamination. Now that you both have come here, my forefathers, the demigods, and the great sages are certainly all satisfied with me. You two lords are the ultimate cause of the entire universe. To bestow sustenance and prosperity upon this realm, you have descended with your plenary expansions. Because you are the well-wishing friends and supreme soul of the whole universe, you regard all with unbiased vision. Therefore, although you reciprocate your devotees' loving worship, you always remain equally disposed towards all living beings. Please order me, your servant, to do whatever you wish. To be engaged by you in some service is certainly a great blessing for anyone. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, You too are the friend, since you assist all beings by bestowing Jnana Shakti and Kriya Shakti to them, and are the soul of all conscious and unconscious things, Jagat Atmanoho. Since you are the root cause of all consciousness, or in spreading over the universe, you are the friends and souls of all beings. The word api indicates all beings. You respond to all those who worship you. You are the shelter of anyone from Brahma to Chandala who surrenders to you. Therefore, you do not have prejudiced vision, since, having equal vision, you are the friend of all and the soul of all. Though you are merciful to those who worship you, you do not have prejudiced visions, since you are equal in material happiness and distress. The sun is not affected by darkness, and the owl's eye does not see the light. Similarly, material happiness and sorrow cannot affect the consciousness of you too. Then from Gita, I am equal to all living beings. I do not hate anyone, nor do I favor anyone. To whatever extent a person worships me with devotion, I am attached to him in a similar way. Bhagavad Gita 9:29. The pure devotee is my very heart. What pains him pains me. I am the heart of the pure devotee. What pleases him pleases me. My devotees do not know anything else but me, and I do not know more than they do. Srimad Bhagavatam 9:468. Right, so whatever is connected with the devotee, and that devotee is connected with Krishna then is interacting based on that. So then here is that how much the devotee knows of Krishna, that's how much he knows, because that's what's in the relationship. Because what's the need of anything beyond that? Right? So then they have that common point of interaction. That's the whole... You know, just like, let's say, if you're dealing with a child, then you only deal in the area of knowledge and words and everything that they know. You don't go beyond. Does that make sense? So like that, in affection, then however the devotee deals with him, that's how Krishna reciprocates. In the above, in both the above verses, the Lord's heart is affected by bhakti and nothing else. Or Sudama speaks out of humility. The two lords, by coming to the house of a low person, devoid of bhakti, show equal vision to all beings. You do not have prejudiced vision. Nahi vam vishama drishtihi. Thinking this person deserves mercy and that person does not. It's just about what it is they do. You don't judge other than that. So how they approach Krishna is how Krishna reciprocates. Since you too have unconditional mercy, suri doho. Moreover, you have affection for the universe, jagat atmanoho. Though you show mercy to those who worship you, you are equal to all beings, high or low, since you are the lords of the universe and unaffected and affectionate to the fallen. Right, so he gave the same opportunity to the demon, washerman, as he did to the garland maker and to the tailor. Right, so he gave the same opportunity, but how each one of them responded, then that's how then he dealt with them.
Just a point about the washerman. It's mentioned in the Puranas that this washerman was a barber in Ramachandra who criticized him for taking Sita back.
Oh, that's that same barber. Same definitely you'd continue the exchange.
The barber?
Oh, that was a barber. Okay. In the Ramlila, when Ramachandra would go incognito out through the kingdom to check, because the kings, they always have spies, and the spies always check everything. But at the same time, you can't just rely on the spies. I mean, you have your systems of spies spying on the spies who have spies spying on them. Right? You know. And so they confirm so many things, they have other methods, they have the ministers and that, but now and again they go out themselves just to see. Because what they know about scripture and how things should be and what others might understand is different. So you have a spy go out and look at something, he'll only see certain things. So he may see this happening, that happening, or he'll say nothing's happening, or this happened, but there's other stuff going on that he doesn't know because that's not his area. So when the king goes himself, then he can see. So when he went out that one time, then he heard this barber then making that criticism about Lord Ramachandra. And so then that barber came again as this washerman. Like that. So, yes.
Yeah, I don't remember many details, but it's that barber, he had a strong desire to see form as Krishna. So he was given that opportunity, but because he had no attraction, he just wanted to see the form.
Okay.
So he saw the form, but he didn't know what to do with that.
Yeah, but he still dealt like he did as the barber.
Yeah.
I doubt, yeah. Oh, what to do?
So the question comes, Maharaj, that when Krishna punished him, so he got purified in that sense. So
yeah, so he got liberated.
He got liberated, but he didn't get the liberation which the earlier demons who were envious of Krishna got. So
it just depends on the mood. If he could, from there. Point is that the demons who are unfavorable to Krishna, when they get killed, they will just go to the liberated state. And they'll stay in that liberated state however long they stay. Then when it comes to the point when they become bored and want to do some activity, now those who are just coming up from the, you know, from, through their practice up to the Brahman platform, the impersonalists, then they'll naturally think of material activities. And then from there they'll go back down. Does that make sense? But those who have been killed by Krishna, then they have that aspect of that form of Krishna. Then seeing that form, then having seen that, now they're in a purified state, remembering that form of Krishna. Then they could become attracted, you know, in a spiritual way or a devotional way. Then they would be elevated to Vaikuntha. But if they don't, then they'll come back to the material world. But you know, they've seen the Lord and like that. So that's why you see is that it both says that they were liberated, but it also says they went to Vaikuntha. Right? So in some places it'll mention it together. And others, then it just says the one, and then other places it explains the other. So Putin is the only one we see that from that position, then she was elevated to Vrindavan. Like that. Everybody else, they generally will just make it to Vaikuntha.
This point that the tailor achieved Sarupya Mukti,
yes,
quite easily from whatever position he had. But
yes,
also, as you mentioned, it's not necessarily about the Lord himself. It's having the same form or being in the same planet,
yes,
and like that.
Means it is pure devotional service. It's just not pure unalloyed devotional service. So it is pure, and that is free from karma jnana. Because you can have spiritual desires, you know, for yourself, you know, is in connection with the Lord. But it'd be, you know, so nice to be with the Lord, or, you know, interact with the Lord or stuff like that. And so even though it's not, there's no element of karma jnana to it, it's still not specifically about what the Lord would like. You know what I'm saying? It's in connection with the Lord. And it doesn't have any material element to it. And so, therefore, then in that environment, then you have that grandeur that's there and all these aspects. Then when you get up to Dwarka and that, then you have the element where then they it'll have that mix. Does that make sense? You know, so he's a super soul, they have that mood and relationship with them, but then in Ras, more rasas than just in Shanta and Dasya. So there's just a natural progression, as we see, you know, as Gopa Kumara goes through all the different realms, or the devotee. He goes through the devotees or the realms?
Well, he goes through the realms.
Realms, okay.
Narad Muni goes through the devotees.
Devotees, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. From the morning discussion, it sounds like the whole process of Krishna consciousness is evolution of desire.
Yeah.
From Artha, Kama, Dharma, then Moksha, then Bhakti, then within Bhakti, we have,
yeah,
different categories.
Yes.
And then from this description, Vaikuntha sounds, it's easily, you know,
It's not easy, but in comparison, it's easy.
Yeah, he just some of his clothes, this, that, and then.
Point is, anything connected to the Lord is there. So that's why we're saying is that liberation for us is not an important element. Other Vaishnavas, they'll accept the Vaishnav liberations, but not Sayujya.
Right.
But we're not even interested in the other four.
Yeah.
So that's why then being beyond liberation, then that's why then it's pure unalloyed. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
And it's just about Krishna. So there's no mix of any other spiritual desire than pleasing Krishna. So like you're saying, evolution of desire. So that's what's unique, is that Lord Chaitanya is given the opportunity to accept and follow in the footsteps of the desire of the residents of Braj. That's not been given before. That's what's unique. Because otherwise they've been given the aspect of the lower Goloka aspect of Vrindavan. Where it's Vrindavan where there's no separation, you know, or different aspects that are there, but not this where the what is in Braja Bhakti, that's not been given before. Yes, so even there's hope for them. The only hope. Yeah, no, if people take according to their position and all that. That's why it's never good to oppose Krishna, Krishna's desire, Krishna's methods, Krishna's systems. Otherwise you end up in a not so wonderful system. Srila Sukadeva Goswami concluded, O best of kings, having spoken these words, Sudama could understand what Krishna and Balaram wanted. Footnote 7. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, because of shyness, Krishna and Balaram did not directly say they wanted the garlands, but since they came to the house of a garland maker, he understood their desire by Krishna's glance at an unfinished garland. So with great pleasure, he presented them with garlands of fresh, fragrant flowers. Beautifully adorned with these garlands, Krishna and Balaram were delighted, and so were their companions. The two lords then offered the surrendered Sudama, who was bowing down before them, whatever benedictions he desired. Sudama chose unshakable devotion for Krishna, the supreme soul of all existence, friendship with his devotees, and transcendental compassion for all living beings. That's not bad. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. Go ahead. By this, it is clear that a devotee of the Lord in Krishna consciousness should not be satisfied simply by his own advancement in devotional service. He must be willing to work for the welfare of all others. This example is followed by the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. It is therefore stated in a prayer about them. Lokanam hitakari now. Vaishnavas, the devotees of the Lord, are not selfish. Whatever benefits they desire from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as benedictions, they want to distribute to all other persons. That is the greatest of all humanitarian activities. Right? So that unshakable devotion to Krishna, because then you're situated properly, then you want friendship with the devotees, then you have those you are associating with and in that way cultivating. But transcendental compassion for all living entities. So, therefore, that because if you have material compassion, it always tends to head south at some point, right? And so, therefore, if you have transcendental compassion, then that will always be auspicious for everybody. Material compassion always ends up as a problem. But spiritual compassion, then that means people are gaining in Krishna consciousness. So in this way, then, he's a devotee, he associates with devotees, and he benefits others so that they may take up that process also. Srila Sukadeva Goswami concluded, not only did Lord Krishna grant Sudama these benedictions, but he also awarded him strength, long life, fame, beauty, and ever-increasing prosperity for his family. Then Krishna and his elder brother took their leave. Conclusion. One who knows Krishna knows everything, and one who has seen Krishna has seen everything. Regardless of how wonderful a thing may be, whatever wonderful things the earth, sky, or water contain all exist in him. Since he encompasses everything, they do not exist separately in water, on earth, or in the sky, since he is the root cause of the universe, giving shelter to it. Knowing him, everything is known. Therefore, what was amazing was not all the things Akura saw within him, but that form within whom all amazing things exist. Hence, we should all sincerely surrender to Lord Krishna. So we see is that those who did that surrender, then they were appreciating this wonderfulness of that form in which is the shelter of everything. So the women of Mathura, then the tailor, Sudama, like this, then they all got that benefit. And then we see is the washerman didn't get quite the same benefit. Okay, chapter 42. The breaking of the sacrificial bow. Pratigya, Krishna cannot be pleased by any action other than transcendental loving service unto him. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes the benediction Trivakra received, the breaking of the sacrificial bow, the destruction of Kamsa's soldiers, the inauspicious omens Krishna's Kamsa saw, and the festivities at the wrestling arena. After leaving Sudama's house, Lord Krishna came upon Trivakra, a young hunchback maidservant of Kamsa's, who was carrying a tray of fine ointments. The Lord asked her who she was and requested some ointment from her. Entranced by his beauty and joking words, Trivakra gave both Krishna and Balaram a good deal of ointment. Right? So Trivakra means bent in three places. So
yes.
This is not the nice threefold bending form like Krishna. This means not nicely bent. Okay. In return, Krishna stepped on her toes and with his lotus feet took hold of her chin and lifted, thus straightening her spine. The now beautiful and charming Trivakra then grabbed the edge of Krishna's upper cloth and asked him to come to her house. Krishna replied that after he had taken care of some business, he would certainly come and relieve her mental torment. Then the two lords continued their sightseeing tour of Mathura. As Krishna and Balaram walked along the king's road, the merchants worshipped them with various offerings. Krishna asked where the bow sacrifice was to take place. And when he arrived at the arena, he saw the wonderful bow, which resembled Lord Indra's. Despite the guard's protest, Krishna forcefully picked up the bow, easily strung it, and in an instant broke it in half, producing an ear-splitting sound that filled the heavens and struck terror in the heart of Kamsa. Right, so these kind of bows are very hard to string. So he easily strung it, and then he pulls it, and to the point where it breaks in half. Right? And such a strong bow, then when it breaks, it will make a very loud sound.
Maharaj, what is this bow sacrifice?
It's coming.
It's coming. Yeah, relax, drink some water. It's coming. The guards attack Krishna, crying out, seize him, kill him. But Krishna and Balaram simply picked up the two halves of the bow and beat the guards to death. Right? Yeah, so one each, right? Next, the lords annihilated a company of soldiers sent by Kamsa, and then they left the arena and continued their tour. Right? So, this is they're having some fun, right? You know, so already, so like this, they're striking fear in the heart of Kamsa. So you start off by doing all these different things. Then he's going to be on his guard. He sends more people. They kill all of them. He just makes it, you know, one of those things to do. When the people of the city, but he continues, just like, who was it? He killed Keshi, right? And then after that, he just went nonchalantly back with the boys and carried on as if everything was normal. When the people of the city saw the amazing prowess and beauty of Krishna and Balaram, they thought they must be two chief demigods. Indeed, as the residents of Mathura gazed upon the lords, they enjoyed all the blessings the gopis had predicted. At sunset, because the gopis had said that, you know, they'll all be benefited, they'll all be attracted. At sunset, Krishna and Balaram returned to the cowherd's camp for the evening meal. They then passed the night resting comfortably. But King Kamsa was not so fortunate. When he heard how Krishna and Balaram had easily broken the mighty bow and destroyed his soldiers, he spent the night in great anxiety. Both while awake and while dreaming, he saw many ill omens, portending his imminent death, and his fear ruined any chance for rest. At dawn, the wrestling festival began. Crowds of people from the city and outlying districts entered the arena and took their seats in the lavishly decorated galleries. Kamsa, his heart trembling, sat down on the royal dais and invited Nandamaraj and other cowherd men to come sit in their places. And they did so after offering him their gifts. The musical overture then began as the sounds of the wrestlers slapping their arms resounded. Shlokanasharanam. Summary of verses. 1-12, the uplifting of Kubja. 13-25, Krishna breaks the sacrificial bow. 26-32, Kamsa's ill omens. 33-38, the festivity at the wrestling arena. Verses 1-12, uplifting Kubja. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, as he walked down the king's road, Lord Madhava then saw a young hunchback woman with an attractive face, who carried a tray of fragrant ointments as she walked along. The bestower of the ecstasy of love smiled and inquired from her as follows, who are you, O beautiful thighed one? Ah, ointment, who is it for, my dear lady? Please tell us truthfully. Give us both some of your finest ointment, and you will soon gain a great boon. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, after leaving the florist place, Krishna and Balaram saw a hunchback young woman carrying a dish of sandalwood pulp through the streets. Since Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure, he wanted to make all his companions joyous by cutting a joke with the hunchback woman. Krishna addressed her, O tall young woman, who are you? Tell me, for whom are you carrying this sandalwood pulp in your hand? I think you should offer this sandalwood to me, and if you do so, I am sure you will be fortunate. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he knew everything about the hunchback. By his inquiry, he indicated that there was no use in serving a demon. She would do better to serve Krishna and Balaram and get an immediate result of the service. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, Kubja was carrying various ointments for the body, such as sandalwood. Krishna is described as Rasa Prada, one who gives rasa. To Kubja, he gave conjugal rasa. To his friends, he gave Hasya Rasa. And to the general public, astonishment. Kubja was an expansion of Satyabhama, or Bhushakti. The earth is also one of her external manifestations. Being non-different from the earth, Kubja showed herself as bent over with the burden of thousands of evil asuras. On the road, associating with the earth, who is filled with greatest devotion, she showed devotion by offering to Krishna the essence of earth element. Fragrance represented by the sandalwood. Like we mentioned, is that you have sandalwood and then you have all the other things that you might mix with it to bring out the fragrances. So when you say they were carrying sandalwood, then it means, that doesn't mean just plain sandalwood, right? It could be mixed with so many things, or it can be what goes along with it. Does that make sense? Like if I say, you know, a meal, it also includes all the salt, pepper, anything else you want to put on it. Does that make sense? So it doesn't mean just the sandalwood. It means all these things. But by saying sandalwood, it means all these things. It's like, I don't know about other places, but in Bengal, you can invite someone, please come to my house for rice. So that means a full meal, not just a snack. It means, because rice means what goes with rice, because you don't just sit down and eat rice. It's rice with all the dal, sabjis, and everything that goes with it. As opposed to, you know, you come over and there'll be a snack or something. Does that make sense? So therefore, when you say sandalwood, it means all the it is the base fragrance, and then all the other fragrances that can go along with that. Does that make sense?
Satya Bhama's expansion is Bhudevi, and then Bhudevi is Kuchu. That is also.
That's basically what they're saying, yes. They're saying Kubja is Bhudevi.
Kubja is Bhudevi.
Yeah. Kubja showed herself bent over with the burden of thousands of evil asuras.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not that they were all standing on her back, and that's why she was bent over. The earth is also one of her external manifestations of Satyabhama. So Satyabhama is Bhu, and then like that. Accepting the sandal with great joy, Krishna bestowed Madhurya Ras on her and said, O my devoted earth, know that the burdens caused by Kamsa and others have now been taken by me. Therefore, now you should stand up straight. Comforting her in this way, he straightened up the blissful Kubja. The maidservant replied, O handsome one, I am a servant of King Kamsa, who highly regards me for the ointments I make. Footnote 8. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, she says, I am engaged only in preparing body ointments for Kamsa and nothing more. By this statement, she indicates her purity, not being engaged in any bodily service or relationship with Kamsa. My name is Trivaka. Who else but you too deserve my ointments, which the Lord of the Bhojas likes so much? Her mind overwhelmed by Krishna's beauty, charm, sweetness, smiles, words, and glances. Trivakra gave both Krishna and Balaram generous amounts of ointment, anointed with these most excellent cosmetics, which adorned them with hues that contrasted with their complexions. The two lords appeared extremely beautiful, so that even they put in different things to give different colors so that they can, you know, and that will then bring out the contrast to bring out the beauty there. So it's not just the fragrance, but it's also... Because before, all these things that had color had fragrance, and things that had fragrance had color, you know. So it's not that you have to put that in. It comes that... Like kumkum actually has a fragrance. Like that. Like that, yeah. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, the true transcendental brothers, Krishna and Balaram, were naturally beautiful and had beautiful complexions, and they were nicely dressed in colorful garments. The upper portions of their bodies were already very attractive, and when the hunchback woman smeared their bodies with sandalwood pulp, they looked even more beautiful. Krishna was very much pleased by this service, and he began to consider how to reward her. In other words, in order to draw the attention of the Lord, the Krishna-conscious devotee has to serve him in great love and devotion. Krishna cannot be pleased by any action other than transcendental loving service unto him. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. Lord Krishna was pleased with Trivakra, so he decided to straighten that hunchback girl with a lovely face just to demonstrate the result of seeing him. Pressing down on her toes with both his feet, Lord Achyuta placed one upward pointing finger of each hand under her chin and straightened up her body. Simply by Lord Mukunda's touch, Trivakra was suddenly transformed into an exquisitely beautiful woman with straight, evenly proportioned limbs and large hips and breasts. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Since Krishna was pleased with the service of the hunchback woman, and since she was touched by Krishna's hands, she became the most beautiful girl among women. This incident shows that by serving Krishna, the devotee immediately becomes elevated to the most exalted position in all respects. Devotional service is so potent that anyone who takes to it becomes qualified with all godly qualities. Krishna was attracted to the hunchback woman not for her beauty but for her service. As soon as she rendered service, she immediately became the most beautiful woman. And because that's the point, is Krishna is the most attractive, so and beautiful, therefore rendering service to Krishna, then the devotee becomes the most attractive and beautiful. That's how it is. A Krishna conscious person does not have to be qualified or beautiful, but after becoming Krishna conscious and rendering service unto Krishna, he becomes very much qualified and beautiful. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continues, now endowed with beauty, character, and generosity, Trivakra began to feel lusty desires for Lord Keshava. Taking hold of the end of his upper cloth, she smiled and addressed him as follows. Trivakra said, come, O hero, let us go to my house. I cannot bear to leave you here. O best of males, please take pity on me, since you have agitated my mind. Footnote 9. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 9 and 10 to Bhagavat Arkamrichi Mala, chapter 6, entitled Tasting the Sublime Nature of Relationships with the Lord, Bhagavat Rasa Tattvam, which is in the Sambandha section of the Thakur's book. So just that contact with the Lord, and then once the natural attraction one has in that for the Lord, then that is the, the nature of this. So now she's come into this rasa, she's tasting that rasa.
Like you mentioned about the three categories in conjugal rasa, and puja belongs to the lowest one. So
means always be careful in that.
No.
We don't go the lowest one, because that lowest one happens to be, even if you get that, what is it, the Hubble, space telescope, it's still, her level is way above us. So that's, you have to be careful in all these things. It's not, we're not storytelling here, we're not gossiping. So therefore it's just that within the actual conjugal rasas that they are in a relationship with Krishna, then this is fully absorbed in Krishna, it's connected to Krishna, but it doesn't have the same position as the gopis in Vrindavan.
Yes, so, can you say that this class of conjugal rasa, like what is very, very bold, because you're just going on in front of
very bold.
Yeah, because
no, it doesn't necessarily mean she's bold, but the ladies on the roofs weren't bold. It means they were bold in that they just went out to see Krishna no matter what they were doing. But then the gopis, when they heard the float, they went out in that. So it just means the force, the intensity of the force of the rasa may make them a little bit more bold. Yeah. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Trivakra said, others are courageous in upholding Dharma, but you are expert in destroying the Dharma of women. Hey, Vira. Krishna replies, you have told me to come. Are you inviting me for dinner? Trivakra said, no, that is not my intention. I cannot tolerate leaving you. Krishna replies, all the people on the street would laugh and make wrong assumptions about your speech. Therefore, do not speak like this. Trivakra said, you have made my mind crazy. If you ask how this has come about, I must say it is because of your touching me. It is not my fault, but yours. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Thus entreated by the woman, Lord Krishna first glanced at the face of Balaram, who was watching the incident, and then at the faces of the cowherd boys. Then with a laugh, Krishna replied to her as follows. Because the eagle looks around, everyone. Lord Krishna said, O lady with beautiful eyebrows, as soon as I fulfill my purpose, I will certainly visit your house, where men can relieve their anxiety. Indeed, you are the best refuge for us homeless travelers. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. She frankly proposed to Krishna, My dear hero, I cannot leave you in this way. You must come to my place. I am already very much attracted by you to your beauty, so I must receive you well, and since you are the best among males, you must also be very kind upon me. In plain words, she proposed that Krishna come to her house and satisfy her lusty desires. Krishna, of course, felt a little embarrassed in front of his elder brother, Balaram, but he knew that the girl was simple and attractive. Therefore, he simply smiled at her words, looking towards his cowherd boyfriends. He replied to the girl, My dear beautiful girl, I am very much pleased by your invitation, and I must come to your home after finishing my other business here. Such a beautiful girl as you are the only means for solace for persons like us, who are away from home and not married. Certainly a suitable girlfriend like you can give us relief from all kinds of mental agitation. Krishna satisfied the girl in this way with sweet words. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains. So he dealt according to the mood that she had. So she was very bold, but she was also very simple. Like that. So therefore she might not notice, you know, that they're out in the public scene and all that. Because this is, you know, sudden change and that simplicity. So then he's not going to make comment based on that. And so therefore he comments very nicely according to what she would appreciate. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains. Krishna then spoke, conveying to Kubja that he was accepting her, and conveying to Balaram and others that he was evading a worldly woman. O beautiful woman, your house takes away the mental sorrows of all men. He spoke of all men to joke with her. After doing my work of killing Kamsa, I will certainly come to your house. In this way, he indicated the time that he would come. You are the supreme shelter of us unmarried men. Krishna, though one person, used the plural, Naha, to produce respect for himself as a prince in Kubja's mind. We are travelers. By this, he hints that in Gokula, his own village, he has many gopis who are attracted to him. But in Mathura, he does not know anyone. Only she is attracted to him here. Thus, he hints that he is attracted to her. On the other hand, expressing himself to Balaram and the others by the use of the plural and using the words travelers and describing her as one who relieves men of distress, Adhi, he indicates her as an ignorant, low woman and criticizes her. Right, so you get all this is all mixed in at once so that by the one thing, then everybody's satisfied. But here also you get the ideas that these other ladies, they're just attracted by Krishna's beauty, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it is they're imbued with conjugal rasa, right? Because here it specifically mentioned that about Kubja, and that she's the only one that he knows here that has that mood. So you do have that aspect also, because Krishna's so attracted, everybody's attracted to him. So it's not definitive on all of them, unless otherwise stated.
No, because in the previous description, it was within their mind, it all happened.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They did embrace him and everything like that. So it would be a conjugal relationship. Yeah. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued. No?
Yes. And this is 13 to 25.
This one?
Verses 13 to 25.
You're thinking that one.
Yes.
Okay. Verses 13 to 25, Krishna breaks the sacrificial bow. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Leaving her with these sweet words, Lord Krishna walked further down the road. The merchants along the way worshipped him and his elder brother by presenting them with various respectful offerings, including pawn, garlands, and fragrant substances. Footnote 10. Srila Sanatana Goswami remarks, he was worshipped along with Balaram and the other boys. They were first worshipped by Brahmanas near the Jamuna at the edge of the city. A little farther within the city, they were now worshipped by Vaishyas. Kshatriyas generally dwelled in the center of the city, and thus their worship of Krishna is not mentioned. The sight of Krishna aroused Cupid in the hearts of the city women. Okay, there it mentions. Thus agitated, they forgot themselves. Their clothes, braids, and bangles became disheveled, and they stood as still as figures in a painting. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, the wives of the merchants were the best of devotees. There are 10 effects of Cupid, Kama, attraction by sight, attraction by the heart, determination, sleeplessness, wasting away, loss of interest in other objects, absence of shame, madness, loss of consciousness, and death. Though these symptoms manifest in stages, at this time they manifested all at once by seeing Krishna. Who are we? Where are we? What are we doing? They were unable to properly understand this. In this way, they manifested symptoms of loss of shame. Because of the impulse of kama, they became thin, and thus the bangles and clothing fell from their bodies, wasting away. Loosening of their hair was due to rolling on the ground, trembling and stretching the limbs, which are all signs of madness, unmada. Okay, stretching of the limbs, so that where Lord Chaitanya's limbs get either bigger or they contract within his body, that's all part of unmada. Standing like painted pictures indicates the ninth stage of loss of consciousness. Because the tenth stage, death, is inauspicious, it does not usually manifest in those expressing prema. Right? There may be the feeling of it, but you don't see it happening. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Lord Krishna then asked the local people where the arena was in which the bow sacrifice would take place. When he went there, he saw the amazing bow, which resembled Lord Indra's. Footnote 11. Srila Jiva Goswami remarks, it was like Indra's bow, rainbow, because it was colorful with embedded gems and huge. Thus it was astonishing. Harivamsa says, the guard showed the two boys the bow, which was like a pillar, which could not be strung or broken by the devatas. So even the devatas couldn't even string it, let alone break it. And then he did it with ease. Right? That most opulent bow was guarded by a large company of men who were respectfully worshipping it. Krishna pushed his way forward and, despite the guard's attempts to stop him, picked it up, easily lifting the bow with his left hand. Lord Urukrama strung it in a fraction of a second as the king's guards looked on. Right? 'Cause that's a difficult thing, because generally these bows they look like a C, the letter C in shape. You know, we're used to, okay, you have very straight bows, and then they just bend a little bit and you string them, right? So those are easier to bend. Then you have the reverse bows, where the tips are bent back the other way a little bit. But it's still straight, just the tips are a little bit. So then you pull those. So that's much more common, you know, throughout, especially in traditional bows, that you go back, that have always been there in various parts of the world. But the Indian bows, these ones that go back, they actually look like a C. The whole thing is bent the other way. So you can imagine how powerful they are. So they're very hard to string, right? The straight bows, you know, it's strength, but it's not so difficult, the technique. The reverse bows, you have to be a little more careful how you catch them on your foot and all that. But then these Indian bows, then they're even more difficult. So you see some of them, even at Draupadi sacrifice, only I think Duryodhana was able to string. Even Jarasandha got thrown to the ground. Right? So that Krishna just picked it up, and then in a moment while they're there, hey, you know, and it's strong. And that's special. That doesn't happen.
Like with the British longbow, they had shown an experiment on TV. I saw that a very muscular guy, he was trying to pull it, and he could only pull it up to his nose. And in tradition,
they pull it up to behind the ear, the this thing. So you're saying that they must be very, very very, very strong to pull that thing.
Yeah, very strong. But also it's just they would practice. I mean, it's from what I've heard, it hasn't been removed from the books. You know, there's an official law from, I forget how far back, 1600s or even before, that after church on Sunday, every able-bodied man and boy has to go down to the, you know, the, I guess, village or city center, wherever is the place where everybody meets, and practice longbow. So if you do that every week for years and years and years, then I guess they become good at it. Easily lifting the bow with his left hand, Lord Urukrama strung it in a fraction of a second as the king's guards looked on. He then powerfully pulled the string and snapped the bow in half, just as an excited elephant might break a stalk of sugar cane. Right? You know, they'll get the sugar cane, grab it, and then whack it and just break it like that because they want to eat it, right? You know, this big long thing, yeah, that's not going to work so good. So you break it and step on it, break it, and they make it into small pieces and then they eat it. The sound of the bow's breaking filled the earth and sky in all directions. Upon hearing it, Kamsa was struck with terror. The enraged guards then took up their weapons and, wanting to seize Krishna and his companions, surrounded them and shouted, "Grab him! Kill him!" Seeing the guards coming upon them with evil intent, Balaram and Keshava took up the two halves of the bow and began striking them down. After also killing a contingent of soldiers sent by Kamsa, Krishna and Balaram left the sacrificial arena by its main gate and continued their walk about the city. Right, so first they killed all the ones there that were guarding the bow, then the contingent of soldiers that came. Then after that, they continued on their leisurely walk. Okay, they continued on their walk about the city, happily looking at the opulent sights. Having witnessed the amazing deed Krishna and Balaram had performed, and seeing their strength, boldness, and beauty, the people of the city thought they must be two prominent demigods. As they strolled about at will, the sun began to set. So they left the city with the cowherd boys and returned to the cowherd's wagon encampment. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book, "After this, Krishna did not proceed further into the sacrificial area, but went out the gate and proceeded towards their resting camp. Along the way, he visited various places in Mathura city with great delight. Seeing the activities and wonderful prowess of Krishna, all the citizens of Mathura began to consider the two brothers to be demigods who had come down to Mathura, and they all looked upon them with great astonishment. The two brothers strolled carefree in the street, not caring for the law and order of Kamsa." Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "At the time of Mukunda's, Krishna's, departure from Vrindavan, the gopis had foretold that the residents of Mathura would enjoy many benedictions, and now the gopis' predictions were coming true, for those residents were gazing upon the beauty of Krishna, the jewel among men. Indeed, the goddess of fortune desired the shelter of that beauty so much that she abandoned many other men, although they worshipped her. After Krishna and Balaram's feet were bathed, the two lords ate rice with milk. Then, although knowing that what Kamsa intended to do, they spent the night there comfortably," right? Because they know about all this, so they're not in anxiety. They know the plan. Because remember before when they heard it from Akrura, they just laughed, you know, and heartily laughed, you know, not just like that. They just thought, you know, what a lame, you know, plan, whatever. So they slept comfortably, right? And so then we'll see the contrast. Kamsa doesn't sleep quite as comfortably. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates, "Having had their feet washed by servants, they ate rice mixed with milk, which had been prepared by Jashoda for them to eat in the evening. This had been kept in pots on the stoves within the carts. Knowing that tomorrow Kamsa desired to arrange for the wrestling match in the arena, amidst huge crowds in the stands, having heard this from others, they spent the night peacefully knowing that they would easily kill Kamsa." Footnote 12. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks, "They slept comfortably because they were fearless. We should understand that it is because of their being fast asleep that they did not hear the words of their fearful father Nanda. O my children, what have you foolishly done today? Why did you break the bow they were worshipping and then kill the guards? I do not know what angry Kamsa will do tomorrow. Why did I bring you two brothers here? Right. So Nanda is saying this, but they were sleeping so nicely and comfortably, they didn't hear all this. After killing the washerman and others, they ate without bathing, only washing their feet, since one must consider that killing sinful people, per people, was the highest dharma. One should give respect to the glories of Mathura. It is said that each inch of the place is a tirtha and each foot is a temple. It was thus permissible that they bathe afterwards. Just because they've been on tirtha there, so they're purified, and they removed the place of sinful characters, so therefore they're purified, so then it works out. Verses 26 to 32. Krishna, Kamsa's evil omens. So that's why then, like the king, he like punishes miscreants and that. So by that punishment, if it's the appropriate punishment for the crime, then the king is actually becomes more pious. Does that make sense? But if he gives the wrong punishment to the wrong person, then he becomes sinful.
King is always in the front of army fighting some place in danger, not sitting back in the palace. But why we see here that Kamsa was sending so many men, not coming out himself, and also Ravana, he was sending so many people.
And because he's the king, so he sent out the small guys first, because this is not a major battle, it's not a confrontation. So he sent out the small guys.
Because he didn't take so seriously.
No, it's just a matter they consider that they can take care, but then when it comes to it, then they'll come out and fight. But even in the war, it's not that the kings come to battle and meet. They're there, they're guiding the whole thing. But depending on what it is, they may be right in the front, or they may be in their particular position, and then guiding, and then they fight, and then you see how it goes from there. Like that.
Arthashastra, one of the five yajnas for the king is to subdue the wicked people. Is a yajna?
Yes, yes. So that's why it's considered auspicious. So that they, as you know, technically because they're Mathura, they're Kshatriyas. But in any case, you know, the one who's responsible like that, and they're removing the evil elements, then that way, then it's auspicious. Verses 26 to 32, Kamsa's ill omens. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. Wicked King Kamsa, on the other hand, was terrified, having heard how Krishna and Balaram had broken the bow and killed his guards and soldiers, all simply as a game. He remained awake for a long time, and both while awake and while dreaming he saw many bad omens, messengers of death. When he looked at his reflection, he could not see his head. That's not a good one. Like that, because you might cut yourself shaving or something, right? You got to see your head, right? For no reason, the moon and stars appeared double. He saw a hole in his shadow, also a bad omen. Right? And he could not hear the sound of his life air. Trees seemed covered with a golden hue, and he could not see his footprints. He dreamt that he was being embraced by ghosts, riding a donkey and drinking poison, and also that a naked man smeared with oil was passing by wearing a garland of Nalada flowers. Seeing these and other such omens while dreaming and while awake, Kamsa was terrified by the prospect of death, and out of anxiety he could not sleep. When the night had finally passed and the sun rose up again from the water, Kamsa set about arranging for the grand wrestling festival. Verses 33 to 38, the festivity at the wrestling arena. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, the king's men performed the ritual worship of the wrestling arena, sounded their drums and other instruments, and decorated the viewing galleries with garlands, flags, ribbons, and arches. The city dwellers and residents of the outlying districts, led by brahmanas and kshatriyas, came and sat down comfortably in the galleries. Srila Jiva Goswami explains. Vishnu Purana gives details. The kings sat in royal pavilions with their servants. There were other pavilions prepared for the women of the palace. There were other pavilions for the important guests and another for the women of the city. Akura and Vasudev were seated in the king's pavilion. Devaki, along with her son, was seated in the middle of the city women's pavilion. She did not enter the pavilion of the palace women because she did not like Kamsa. So she just went to the city women's pavilion. The enclosure for the crowds was glorious, like an ocean with masses of clouds, with pavilions decorated and constructed for the contest. The pavilions for the masses were like a mountain. The viewing galleries for the women of the palace, not far away, shone with gold and gems. There were separate pavilions for the courtesans, spread with splendid cloth. The pavilions of important merchants shone like vehicles of the devatas. There were other pavilions made of wood and hundreds and thousands of seats. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. So this pavilion would make the modern, what do you call it? You know, stadiums and that look pretty small. Plus, those aren't very attractive. They may be big, but, you know, just not nice. But these are all decorated and nice and, yeah. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "The royal guests received special seats. Surrounded by his ministers, Kamsa took a seat on the imperial dais. But even as he sat amidst his various provincial rulers, his heart trembled." Right, so even though he's surrounded by all others who, you know, are probably good fighters and everything like that, still he's not very comfortable. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book, "The wrestling arena was nicely cleansed and decorated with flags, festoons, and flowers, and the match was announced by the beating of kettle drums. The platform appeared very beautiful due to streamers and flags. Different types of galleries were arranged for respectable persons, kings, brahmins, and kshatriyas. The various kings had reserved thrones, and others had arranged seats also. Kamsa finally arrived, accompanied by various ministers and secretaries, and he sat on the raised platform especially meant for him. Unfortunately, although he was sitting in the center of all his governing executive heads, his heart was palpitating in fear of death. Cruel death evidently does not care even for a person as powerful as Kamsa. When death comes, it does not care for anyone's exalted position." Right. Srila Jiva Goswami explains, Harivamsa describes the king's pavilion. The pavilion of Kamsa, facing east, was well constructed and shone like the peak of Meru. It had pillars shining like golden yantras, and was decorated with pictures. His pavilion, suitable for living, decorated with garlands, shone with the highest beauty. Kamsa looked at the construction of the pavilion, decorated with roofs and the best apartments, with many pillars of one type made of gold. The pavilion was beautiful. The pavilion was beautiful doors. Probably had beautiful doors, wide and fixed firmly in all directions. Because he's saying it's arranged in such a way you could actually live there. It was so nice, the pavilion. Like that, at least his one. The other ones would be very comfortable, but, you know, this one's there. So it had doors in all the directions. It had, you know, all the golden pillars. It was, you know, very attractive. Garlands. It had steps facing north, a throne and paths radiating in all directions. It was covered with seats and destroyed samsara for all men. The difference between a mashya and a prekshagara is that the mashya had less covering and the prekshagara had elaborate coverings. He was seated amongst the provincial rulers so they could serve him. Others were friendly kings. Kamsa's heart trembled since he was in continual fear, having seen the bad omens. Okay, so he is surrounded by other kings, which means that they're, you know, they're warriors and that. And, you know, Kamsa likes to hang out with, you know, nasty guys, so they would be quite strong. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, while the musical instruments loudly played in the rhythmic meters appropriate for wrestling matches, the lavishly ornamented wrestlers proudly entered the arena with their coaches and sat down. Really, so even then they came with their coaches, right? So it's just the standard. And they always lavishly dressed and always, you know, it's the whole fanfare as they walk in. So things haven't changed, right? You know, just the pavilion is not as nice. And, you know, the arena is a little smaller and less decorated. Huh?
Dark.
Dark, yeah, yeah. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, not only did instruments sound, but the wrestlers kept the beat by slapping their arms. This could be heard distinctly above the sounds of the instruments. This indicated the great strength of the wrestlers, because if you can slap yourself that hard to make a sound louder than the instrument, it means you're quite strong, right? Because it's part of the thing wrestlers, part of what they do is bodily conditioning, so they do. They slap themselves, they whack themselves, like that, so they get used to getting hit. Otherwise, if you're not used to that, then someone hits you, then it's not very good. Yes. Enthused by the pleasing music, Chanura, Mustika, Kuta, Shala, and Toshala sat down on the wrestling mat. Nandamars and the other cowherds, summoned by the king of the Bojas, presented him with their offerings and then took their seats in one of the galleries, right? Because they had brought all the tax, so they brought that all, presented it to him, you know, because it's a nice, it's an official occasion, because he was invited them for the program, so that's naturally where they're going to make their offerings. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, with respect and comforting intentions, Sham, Kamsa called Nanda and others. In this way, encourage Nanda. You, the king of Vraja, are the chief among my leaders. Though you have come from the village, it is from fear that you did not associate. Is it from fear that you did not associate intimately with me? Do not consider that your two sons breaking the bow was so bad. They showed their strength to me by doing so. I have heard that they are strong, so I have called them to see for myself. Do not be afraid. Quickly come forward. Nanda noticed that his two sons, out of disrespect for Kamsa's orders, had gone elsewhere that morning, not waiting from them to come on their own. He sent some affectionate, closely related cowherd men to protect them and teach proper behavior. Having instructed them, he quickly brought them to the arena. Upananda and others quickly came forward and offered yogurt, ghee, cloth, and gold coins. Not seeing any space on the platform of the king, they sat in another place at the order of Kamsa. Conclusion. Krishna cannot be pleased by any action other than transcendental loving service unto him. By serving Krishna, the devotee immediately becomes elevated to the most exalted position in all respects, both spiritually and materially. Krishna was attracted to the hunchback woman not for her beauty, but for her service. As soon as she rendered service, she immediately became the most beautiful woman. A Krishna-conscious person does not have to be qualified or beautiful. After becoming Krishna-conscious and rendering service unto Krishna, he becomes very much qualified and beautiful. So that's it. All the good qualities come. That's why it says the devotee develops all the good qualities of the demigods. So that's from rendering service to Krishna, because Krishna is most beautiful. He's the most perfect. So therefore, rendering service to him, then the servant becomes like the master. Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi ki.